Big show for you here today. Sal Vetri joins me for the Week 12 data dump, and we have a ton to get into. Anthony Richardson back in our lives. The Bears offense may be back in our lives after a play caller change, and we get into the Packers playing time distribution back in Week 11 and what it means going forward and whether you should fear this Eagles defense with your Rams players in Week 12. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Wednesday, November 20th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is, as it always is, it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Sal Vetri, as he always is here on Wednesday. Sal, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. We continue to be in the dog days of the fantasy season. And this is like the week that I just want to get through the most because of Thanksgiving coming up, probably, at least for me, like the most fun football, fantasy, betting, any type of week you want to put in there. So we're just trying to get through Week 12, especially when you see six teams on bye. Everything right now just feels scary.
Yeah, six teams on bye. It's funny because these are the type of weeks where, especially going through like, all right, what stats are we going to highlight and things like that? The pressure seems higher just because, okay, we maybe have to look for some random players that people need to consider, things like that. At the same time, though, Sal, I also feel like we can highlight these spots where, oh, maybe this guy's not in a great situation. I know you definitely one of your stats, fits into this category. But at the same time, it's just like, hey, six teams on bye, you might not have the luxury of great options. You might just be like, all right, you know, maybe Malik Nabers has old Tommy DeVito as a starting quarterback. You're going to have to go ahead and play Malik Nabers.
Yeah, like I was getting ready for a Yahoo piece, and one of the players we'll talk about in this, I was like, yeah, I mean, this is, I kind of want to sit this player this week. And then I was looking at options and rankings early on, and I'm like, there's absolutely no way you can sit this player if you have him on your team. So, yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, it's a very Week 12 feel. It's a very pre-Thanksgiving feel. But hey, the fantasy regular season is almost over, so people are making their playoff pushes. These are the final few weeks, so again, we got a lot of pressure here on this show to try to give some people good information. I know we have a ton of things to get through. Let's get into the Week 12 data dump.
Yes, science!
My calculations are correct. You're going to see some serious...
Reminder how this works. Sal's got five stats that he thinks you all need to know. I've got five stats that I think you all need to know, some storylines we're trying to highlight here. We also finish with our secret stat, our fifth and final one. The other host is going to try to guess the player that we are highlighting. And then we'll finish this up with no longer Sal's moves to make because the trade deadline has come and gone. We're actually going to change this segment around. It's going to be based on some stash candidates. You guys know if you followed my content for a long time, I love talking about these stash candidates as the fantasy playoffs are right around the corner. So let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. Sal, give me your first stat here in the Week 12 data dump.
Yeah, Anthony Richardson returns for the Colts, and he sees a season-high 66% completion percentage in that's out of his completed games. There was one game he had 75%, only had four attempts, then he left that game. So we got a better Anthony Richardson in this one. According to PFF, they're number seven graded quarterback on the week in passing, ahead of the likes of Mahomes, Burrow, and slightly even ahead of Justin Herbert from his nice performance on Sunday. So it was a good week for Richardson. Like, I kind of want to point to things that watching kind of his throws, all of his dropbacks, what looked better, he was just making the passes, right? Like, that's kind of what it was. He got some help from some receivers. He even didn't get help. Like, you look at this and he completes 20 of 30 attempts. There was two drops in this game. There was, I would say, at least one throwaway. So the numbers were even better than what you see in the final box scores here. He was 2 of 4 on downfield passing, averaging over 9 yards per attempt. It was the high end of what you hope from Anthony Richardson. And it was great to see. 29 fantasy points. He goes for nearly 300 passing yards, gets a couple of rushing touchdowns. Everything was good here. And even the pass catchers get going. You get Josh Downs with Richardson, continued to have nice games, 80 plus yards and a touchdown. Pittman leads the team with 8 targets, did have a drop in this game, but overall was practicing throughout the week. Looks like, or at least it seems like, he's healthier than he was 2 to 3 weeks ago. So everybody in this passing attack seems to be lifted. My only question is this sustainable moving forward? It was good to see. It was awesome to see. Is it sustainable moving forward? Or at least can we feel better now about our Josh Downs shares?
Well, I don't know about you, but I certainly feel better after that game for sure. And yeah, I like a lot of your points there that it just felt like he was a comfortable quarterback. Was it, oh my God, you know, he's fixed every issue that he had? No, of course not. Like, that's not what a 2-week stint on the bench is going to do. But, you know, I do think that he looked a little calmer. I think he looked a little bit more confident in what he was doing. That was the thing that was really jarring if you were a Richardson believer in what we saw before this benching, is that even if he has been an erratic quarterback from an accuracy standpoint, it never felt early on in Richardson's career, and I know we're dealing with small sample sizes, but even back to Florida, it never felt like he was an erratic player, that he was a guy who was lacking confidence or wasn't just in the flow of the game, things like that. But it did start to feel like that, especially against that Texans, in that Texans game where he tapped himself out, and obviously then he was benched for the two games afterwards. It did feel like things were unraveling. This felt more like the player that I expected, a guy who was confident in what he was seeing, delivering the football, and just, you know, not making back-breaking mistakes as well. He wasn't perfect. I think he started off the game a little bit shakier than how he finished it. But again, Michael Pittman had a quote in the locker room to reporters where he said rhythm is basically I'm paraphrasing, but rhythm is just a synonym for confidence. If you're in rhythm, you're going to start to feel more confident. And that, I think it's hard to quantify this right on a data dump podcast, but Sal, I would say that a lot of the concepts that they ran prior to this benching at different times this year, it felt like they wanted to lean into the verticality of Richardson's skill set. And I understand that because he's such a tantalizing talent. But at the same time, this Shane Steichen offense with guys like Gardner Minshew in it have felt like one of the most rhythmic attacks. This against the Jets, this result felt much more like that rhythmic attack rather than sort of the downfield push the ball into all different sections of the field. So I do feel pretty good about what we've seen, and it can change. But for now, I do feel a little bit better.
Yeah, and you really even haven't had this offense for Steichen like fully healthy all year. Started the season hurt. Then they don't have Jonathan Taylor for a month. Then the Michael Pittman back injury starts to become a problem. So I think this was really only the second game, if that, like a full completed game that they've had all of their weapons and their playmakers out there, which definitely matters when you're trying to scheme against a defense. So I'm interested to see how it looks moving forward. Jonathan Taylor, 25 touches, doesn't find the end zone. Richardson seeing two of those. That could be a problem moving forward, but I do think it's balanced out. You'll take it if this offense is sustaining drives and getting to the red zone. You're just going to be put in better situations if you're Taylor. So if you're a Taylor fantasy manager, I wouldn't be panicking right now. I think if anything, you can still see some good things from this, just getting the ball downfield more.
Honestly, that was one of the biggest shocks, was that typically when, if you just look at the splits, and splits are small sample sizes, they can lie to you, but the run game has been much better with Jonathan or with Anthony Richardson under center than it has been with Joe Flacco under center, which makes sense, right? Because you're having to play 11 on 11 football. You're accounting for somebody in Richardson when you're not accounting for somebody in Flacco. It does make sense. We always see this, right? With, not always, but typically we do see run games, running backs be more efficient with a mobile quarterback back there. So that was a mild surprise. I do just want to highlight the Josh Downs matchup this week, because this has been the case for the Lions all year long, which is the Colts week 12 opponent. They're definitely more vulnerable in the slot than they are to perimeter wide receivers. They've allowed 1,116 yards to slot receivers, 111.6 yards per game. That is the most in the NFL so far this year. So both numbers. Yeah, this is a pretty good matchup here for Josh Downs this week.
Yeah, and they come in like 7.5-point underdogs. Probably game script means throwing more. The betting markets early on have Downs for 55.5 receiving yards. I actually took the over on that this morning. I think it's that's a pretty good number for him. That just indicates that he should have a good game. That number's usually in that range anyways. So I think the fact that they're 7-point underdogs, you're just going to get more passing than usual, probably leads to more targets for the current target share leader on this team.
Before we move to your second stat, little piece of news here. Not that we need to go deep on this, but Joe Douglas fired as the Jets GM. So the Jets continue to find people in the building to fire. Joe Douglas was out of a contract at the end of the year. We all knew he was probably going to get fired. They're headed for a full-scale rebuild. But everybody but Aaron Rodgers is going to lose their job by the end of the season.
I mean, that's what they signed up for that. They probably knew they were dancing with the devil. And unfortunately, it's tilted towards that way, the devil right now.
It's just because we did just talk about the Colts and now discussing the Jets. It is And I know, like I said, splits can lie, but it is crazy if you just map how hard this defense has fallen off since they fired Robert Saleh. And, you know, I think there was probably a percentage chance that they were going to take a step back anyways, just because that's what happens with defense. It's inherently volatile. They did not get Hassan Reddick into the fold, so they had issues, I think, as a perimeter pass rush team. We talk about, like, Sauce Gardner has been one of the best corners in the league, but we know that cornerback play is inherently volatile, and he's definitely been picked on this year. I mean, we're talking about these Colts receivers. A.D. Mitchell barely played in this game after running a route on almost 90% of the dropbacks in week 10. He only ran a route on 18.8% of the dropbacks in week 11. One of those routes, though, is against Sauce Gardner, where he got him right off the line of scrimmage on one of those A.D. Mitchell inbreakers that I'd like to see more of. So there was always a chance this defense was going to fall apart just because it's defense. But, man, it is crazy just the how much this unit has gone from a, oh, maybe stay away matchup to actually maybe this is a matchup that you want to lean into playing people against. Obviously, the Jets are on bye this week, so you can't do that this week. But going forward in the fantasy playoffs, that is something to note.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to see, like, obviously when you lose your coach and the guy who's coaching the defense for the most part in Saleh, like, that's going to be part of it. But probably also, like, a cultural thing, maybe a little bit of a motivational thing for the players in there who didn't see that coming, didn't think it was going to happen, maybe aren't happy with it. You talk about they're spending a week or two, like, hyping up their ability to tackle and demonstrations on that. Like, I don't think these players right now are feeling too motivated in the locker room. Maybe that has something to do with a massive drop-off as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so many good points there. Plus, not to mention, Jeff Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator who people are very high on, then promoted to interim coach. Now you've put more stuff on his plate. He's spending less time with the defense. So obviously the Jets have mismanaged the hell out of multiple parts of this whole experience. But this specific coaching change has been a big problem. And yeah, you're so right. Like, these guys loved Robert Saleh. The one thing I would give credit to Saleh for, even if you could definitely make a case that he was not a great head coach, just look at the record and look at the results. And I think some decisions along the way, it was just he was clearly going to get fired anyways. But the one thing I'd give him credit for is that despite the fact that they were consistently far and away the best side of the ball, the defense, they never lost motivation. They never just packed it in. They never straight up mutinied on the offense or anything like that, which we've seen other Jets teams, like under Rex Ryan, do exactly that, right? The defense would just pretty much mutiny against the offense because it was such a disaster. And again, it is crazy. Now he's gone. This has become a defense to attack. So yeah, I mean, the Jets are a disaster. They're on their bye this week. Joe Douglas out of a job there. But let's maybe,
at least they got Davante Adams.
Sick.
I mean, that's good.
Sick. Well, you. How do you like? If you actually gave Davante Adams truth serum, Sal, how do you think he would? How do you think he would? I don't know. Judge his own decision making in the last couple of months here.
Well, if you gave him truth serum, I think he would have to tell us that he never had a hamstring injury to begin with. I think that's where he would start with. Yeah, I think he's just trying to get through the year, maybe get to retirement at this point. Same thing with Rod. They might just sail off into the sunset together because right now, not a lot of positivity coming out for either of them the past 12 to 18 months.
You know, I mean, it's worth noting. Like, Davante Adams is definitely he'd be wasting away in irrelevance in Las Vegas, right? It's not as if, like, oh, yeah, if he had stayed there, everything would have been just fine. But he is definitely a testament, and like, Diontae Johnson is this, too. The grass is not always greener on the other side, folks. Why'd you ever go to Vegas in the first place? Shoot. I mean, you're miserable there. You got to be miserable now in New York. I mean, At least you're with your pal. But I don't know. I think Adams will be an interesting player to consider because I can't imagine he's going to be with the Jets next year. And he'll probably be available in free agency for some other team. And hopefully for his fourth NFL team, he makes a little bit better of a decision than going from his second team to really going from his first team to his second team to his second team to his third teams. Some missed decision making along the way there for our guy, Davante Adams. But that's enough Jets depression. Let's talk about what I actually think is maybe a little bit of a happy storyline here for your second one, even though this team lost in week 11.
Yeah, I want to look at the Bears under a brand new play caller in week 11. So a couple of things here. We could start with the wide receiver room. The thing that stood out for me was Roma Dunze. He sees a team high and season high 32% target share. He was the fifth Bears wide receiver to hit this elite metric, if you want to call it a threshold of a 30% target share this year. Second time he's done it, but the first time he did it, there was no Keenan Allen in that game. Mm. Much more impressive now that all the receivers were healthy. But look, even though he's a new playmaker, he catches, or play caller, he catches six balls, 65 yards. Like, it's a little bit more volatile in the wide receiver room with play calling. Could be a matchup thing. In general, though, I think this is a step in the right direction. I thought the usage was pretty good here, though. On his 10 targets, six of them were in the short areas of the field. Four of them were downfield. Two of those downfield targets, they go to him. They trust him at the end of the game, including on the fourth down, 21-yard reception to keep the chains going for their potential game-winning field goal. So I thought the usage was good for him. If we keep seeing that, that's solid. I mean, six short targets to four deep is almost like ideal for a fantasy perspective in terms of a split for consistency with some upside. But what I thought was even more interesting in this game was the backfield, because I think that's a little bit more deliberate when you're actually putting a different player on the field. And that's what happened here. Roschon Johnson, the backup, saw a season high 44% of the snaps in this game. He saw the majority of the snaps and carries at the goal line, including the go-ahead touchdown late in the game, and he played on 100% of the two-minute offense snaps. So he's starting to see a lot more of this usage where, for fantasy-wise, checkdowns in the two-minute offense, obviously touchdowns when you're getting red zone and goal line carries, that's going to hurt DeAndre Swift's upside, who only saw 48% of the team's backfield carries in this game. Now, it's kind of hidden up by the fact that he goes for over 80 yards and a touchdown again. By the way, Swift now at least 80 yards total in six of his last seven games. Like, he's been very good, but this is slowly an underlying, I would say, slight concern, maybe major concern, that Roschon's getting more involved. And I think it's a more deliberate thing than what we saw in the wide receiver room. Either way, though, the offense looked good. Caleb Williams got going as well as a runner. So all that is a step in the right direction for everybody involved here, except maybe Swift.
Yeah, I think that Roschon Johnson might be one of the top pickups off the waiver wire. Yeah. He was my top guy in the segment with Dalton yesterday, just because, yeah, he's, when we talk about stash candidates, if anything ever happens to DeAndre Swift, I think he would inherit the RB1 gig there. There's no more Khalil Herbert. Like, I don't think there's probably not another back that's going to suddenly get involved here. Similar to what we've seen with Chase Brown in Cincinnati. Probably not going to be that extreme because it's the Bears offense versus the Bengals offense, but we could definitely see him have a real deal pass game role and be the only running back basically getting involved in the rush attempts here. Plus, he might have some standalone value. Like, oh, you've got a bunch of teams on bye this week. If you're absolutely desperate, you're just in a really tough spot, you can call Roschon Johnson a what-the-heck flex type of player because you're just hoping for a few catches, maybe one of these goal line attempts, things like that. Those are the ideal backs to roster in fantasy. So I love the call out on Roschon here. In the passing game, Sal, I love Roma Dunze. He was one of my favorite prospects. I want to get excited about him. I still just think this is too crowded of a room for him to truly ever become like a trustable fantasy starter. I think 2025 will be his time. But I do like that you highlight his usage here. What did you think about DJ Moore getting some more kind of what I'd call like design touches, screens, RPOs, things like that?
Yeah, I think for your number one option on the offense, that should be happening, and that's great to see that it's actually happening. The one caveat I would say for Adunze this year as to why maybe I'm a little bit more excited about him than you rest of season is just end of the year, young player, rookie, trending in the right direction, as opposed to with Keenan Allen being an older player, end of the year, maybe that starts to wear on him a little bit more. It's more of like an anecdotal thing and just trying to maybe wish casting to some extent, but I would still say rest of the season for sure, DJ Moore is the number one option here. I thought he had like a receiving yards total of 44 going into that game. I thought that was like a rock bottom part in terms of the betting markets. He seemed to get going, and Adunze, I do think for me at least, moves up rest of season rankings right now. Again, just a 1 week sample. This could be a matchup thing, and he got a lot of that work done on his final drive, two catches, 37 yards downfield, but thought the usage was good for him. And then, yeah, I think the biggest winner here, and as you mentioned, Roschon, number one ad this week, definitely for me, in terms of like the last 4 to 6 weeks on the waiver wire for running backs, might be the best candidate there overall since like Tyron Tracy way, way long ago.
I completely agree with you on Roschon. With Rome, I'm just trying to keep my optimism. Fair. Yeah, I'm trying to just keep it tepid here, but I hope you're right. It's not like Keenan Allen's not going to be on this team next year. He's on an expiring contract. He's an older player. I don't think he's going to sign an extension with this team. It would behoove them, even though I don't think this coaching staff is going to be around and none of these guys are going to be there, it would behoove them still to get Rome ramped up. He's also had a couple of like incredible blocks the last few games. I want to see him on the field more like blocking as opposed to Keenan Allen and some of the some of the blocking we've seen from Keenan Allen as of late. Just last note of the Bears, too, from a route participation standpoint, 94.9% for DJ Moore, 79.5% for Keenan, 76.9% for Rome, 71.8% for Cole Kmet. No other running back or tight end registered higher than 2.6. It was just the two running backs in terms of guys who ran routes basically after those two, after those big four players. So good news for those wide receivers kind of consolidating there. Let's stick at the wide receiver position and go with your third stat that people need to know this week.
Yeah, are we approaching, and maybe for some people already there, a new wide receiver one, top 12 receiver rest of season, Juwan Jennings at this point? We talked about him a little bit last week, and then he comes out and he backs it up again. He was already a top 24 wide receiver rest of season for me heading into week 11. Now I'm early on. I'm not completing my rest of season rankings. It looks like he's going to be a top 20 option for me, maybe borderline top 15, because he just keeps producing at this point. He's now played this past week. He goes for another 11 targets, 10 plus catches, a touchdown, and 90 yards. In his last four completed games, he's had at least 88 receiving yards. And now in three games this year, two of them without Ayuk, one of them without Deebo Samuel, he's averaging 11.3 targets per game, at least 11 targets in all those games, 119 yards per game, at least 90 yards in all those games, and now he's coming off of games of a 33% and 38% target share. And oh, by the way, during this span of these games I'm mentioning, 82% catch rate would rank third in the NFL. He's just been extremely reliable at this point. The broadcast was calling him third in Juwan this past weekend. I thought it was a great thing. He had 6 of his 10 targets on third down. These past 2 weeks, he's had 9 of 21 targets on third or fourth down. Those are the money downs in the NFL. That's where your play caller and your quarterback go to, your most trusted, usually your best player on offense. And right now, that's been Juwan Jennings over Deebo Samuel. Kittle wasn't playing last week. I think to some extent, of course, it's a small sample. Deebo's probably still dealing with, if not one, but two different injuries. But that's the reality right now, and Jennings is making the most of it. So I'm looking at rest of season rankings, and he's starting to hover around a wide receiver 15 behind guys like DK Metcalf and Terry McLaurin for me, but ahead of guys like CeeDee Lamb, Zay Flowers, Davante Adams. I'm wondering if I'm just being a little bit too, you know, a prisoner of the moment here, recency bias, or if this is justified.
Yeah, admittedly, I can be slower and more conservative in some of these situations, whereas like I think in terms of viewing him rest of season, so you might be right on this. I've been a little bit more hesitant, but this is the neighborhood of players he's in. So just before we talk about some of those players, you think it's because we talked about this with Dalton yesterday, you think it is definitely Juwan Jennings over Deebo Samuel rest of season? Like, that's an easy call for you?
That's the call I'm deciding right now. Debo's right around like my wide receiver 19 or 20. Again, I haven't finalized these yet. The big bye weeks are kind of making it a little bit challenging, but So Debo's like my wide receiver 20 right now. And that's around, I'm leaning like Jennings around 16, 17 for me. Again, it's like a coin flip if Debo's in the same tier, a couple spots down, but yes.
Yeah. But this is definitely the bucket of players that I view, Juwan Jennings in right now. And look, it's tough because I definitely think he is the type of receiver. You look at just the average depth of target, the explosive plays outside of that one game against the LA Rams. He's not that type of like explosive player that if he gets 5 targets in a game, he can still make your fantasy week on 5 targets. That's probably not going to happen. I think he's a bit more of like a compiler. You know, you talk about the third and Juwan stuff. He's been that third down chain mover. He's more of he's an X receiver for them, but he's not really the vertical X receiver type like Brandon Ayuk is. He's like a bit of a compiler. He's a possession type guy. So I think that the floor right now seems great. I'm a little suspicious that floor could go at any point, but you can say that about any of those wide receivers that you just put in that bucket. I mean, shoot, Zay Flowers has had floor games, obviously. Even McLaurin is coming off a floor game, as we know. CeeDee Lamb, unless Cooper Rush is going to keep throwing the ball 55 damn times, he's probably got some floor games in his range of outcomes as well.
Yeah, I think what gives me some more confidence, and I agree, like, you look at the last 2 weeks alone, his yards per catch is like, what, 8-9 yards, so it's not a lot of explosive plays in there, but the offense that he's in just gives me a lot of confidence. Brock Purdy's playing lights out this year, even in tough situations. Seems like last week he was battling a little bit of a shoulder issue while playing. You're attached to Kyle Shanahan as the X receiver in general. That kind of gives me like a tiebreaker over some of these other receivers in this range, like CeeDee Lamb right now, with what we're seeing from, at best, it seems like Cooper Rush right now. We'll see what happens if Trey Lance takes over, but that's kind of where I'm settling right now on Jennings, a top 20 wide receiver rest of season, the way that it looks. We'll see what happens with Kittle moving forward in his health. But week in and week out right now, I feel very good about having him in flex spot, wide receiver 2 spots in my lineups.
Let's move on to your fourth stat here, which is, as I mentioned, about a player that you might not want to play, but Sal might have a couple of notes of some optimism here for Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah. Cautious optimism on Brian Thomas Jr. I don't feel good about admitting this, but I watched all 29 Mac Jones attempts, not only yesterday watching back the film, which, look, it was an awful time. It was terrible. I watched that game, most of it live, as one of the four games in my box on Sunday.
I had players in the game.
I had Brian Thomas in a lot of lineups this year. I recently bought low on him in some spots. So I was like, let's see what we can do here. Terrible experience watching Mac Jones play. Anything over 20 yards, as you would imagine, especially to the outside, was not great. And we saw in week 10, Brian Thomas did nothing. A season low 3 targets, did nothing with Mac Jones. But they kind of changed his usage in week 11 to, I would say, a pretty significant amount. We saw a lot more short area targets and routes and usage for Brian Thomas. First and 10 in the second quarter with a minute to go, catches a short pass middle of the field, 24 yards. Then there was two other, almost seemed like dump-offs in some way, as if you were a running back. That's how short these crossing routes were for Brian Thomas in the third quarter, and then in the fourth quarter, he takes those for 21 and 23 yards. I mean, this guy has speed, we know that. If he's going to get more involved on these type of routes, if it is Mac Jones moving forward, that gives me a little bit more optimism, like we saw this past week where you get a solid day out of him. Of course, blowout run, but that might be the case in most games for the Jaguars moving forward. And we do get a little bit of optimism or the door staying open on Trevor Lawrence returning after the bye in week 13. The injury that we got more information, it's to his non-throwing shoulder. There is a chance that he does return. As of right now, they're giving no updates. We'll probably know more in a week or a week and a half. But if Lawrence comes back, well, then I think you get the guy to some extent in Brian Thomas, who seems like he's getting healthier over his own chest injury a month or so removed from that, who was like a borderline top 20 to top 24 wide receiver the first month to month and a half of the season. If your trade deadlines are still available right now, I think he's somebody that's interesting going into the bye week if you have the spot on your team and the depth to trade for and buy low. It's been gross with Mac Jones, but I'm holding out hope that we get Trevor Lawrence back, and I at least like to see that they're moving around their best wide receiver into places to win this past week.
Yeah, the tough part for Thomas is just that this is when he should be probably improving as a player, because he's just playing more. He's a rookie wide receiver. He's going to come off his bye week here in week 12, that post-bye rookie bump that we always talk about. This should be where he is starting to get some different usage. It's not just downfield routes and things like that. They're getting him in more of these schemed up yards after catch opportunities, because, man, he can really rip it in the open field. So this should be right around when we're getting into those spots. It's just Mac Jones is under center, you know, Doug Peterson's kind of on the ropes. The team is beginning to fall apart and things like that. So even if we don't get great results rest of the season, I think watching Brian Thomas in isolation is going to be critical to decide how we feel about him in 2025, in Dynasty and things like that. But I'm with you that if he gets this type of usage, the floor won't completely bottom out, which is why from like a rest of the season rankings perspective for me, I've never completely tanked Brian Thomas, even though I'm definitely scared about the weekly floor here. And yeah, I mean, in any of these games against the Texans, even the Titans in week 14, because that's a pretty good defense, I could see Brian Thomas having 2 for 24 or something like that, just because the entire offense gets blanked for four quarters.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think like his overall rest of the season value really comes down to seeing Trevor Lawrence back on the field in week 13, which who knows how incentivized they are to get him out there and what his health looks like. So we'll really have to probably reevaluate in a week. But I will throw myself some bail on watching that game. I was watching as well for the Lions side of the ball. Amon-Ra St. Brown, some props that we had in that one. Jahmyr Gibbs. But yeah, I do have a gross amount of Evan Engram and Brian Thomas as well.
I'm proud of you.
It hasn't been a good year.
Oh, it's been a fine year. I mean, it's just your week 11 decision making there with Mac Jones on one of the screens. That's tough. That is pretty tough. Cannot be an enjoyable experience. But hey, I'm proud of you for admitting it. It takes a man to admit that they watched Mac Jones twice in the span of 72 hours or whatever it was. So, all right, let's get to your fifth and final stat here, which is, of course, the secret stat.
Secret stat and player, it's a tight end on the rise. Look, since week 5, believe it or not, this guy leads his team in target share with a 21% target share. Okay, ahead of all the receivers and, of course, the running backs. During this time, he also ranks 3rd in yards per route run amongst tight ends, 2nd in yards after the catch, and he's a top 10 tight end in fantasy points per game with at least 6 targets in 5 of his last 6 games. So Everything right now is looking fantastic. Only three other tight ends have six or more targets in five of their last six games. Those tight ends are Cade Otton, Dalton Kincaid, Travis Kelce. So none of those guys are the secret tight end. There's a little bit of a cheat code for you right now. This tight end is not on bye this week. He's actually a really nice bye week filler for you. He's still available in around or so 50% of fantasy leagues on the waiver wire. So I think right now he's coming into a matchup against a bottom 10 team this week. I won't say that team's name just yet in terms of coverage, according to PFF. So, Matt Harmon, who is this secret player hidden by my secret stats?
I've got two guesses.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with my first instinct. My second instinct made me think twice. I'll give you the two. When you said bottom 10, you know, pass defense, like, all right, this is one of two guys, basically. But the fact that you did say big and fast and seemingly become the number two option in his offense, that is what points me to Jonnu Smith of the Miami Dolphins.
Correct. 100% hit rate right now continues, and the pressure is officially on me in a couple of moments.
Yeah, and I think mine might be a little, I mean, I think it might be difficult. We'll see. So I'm hoping we can continue 100% success rate on this one, and I don't trip you up there. But the other guy I thought about was Will Dissly, but
okay.
I was like, yeah. Okay, big, but probably not fast.
Yeah, fair. I'm in multiple leagues where I picked up Jonnu Smith ahead of this week for guys that I have on bye in week 12 with a ton of teams on bye. And I was just like, all right, we're just going to throw him in. We hope for, you know, your three catches, 30 yards. And after what he did this week on my bench in those leagues, but then also just looking back and diving into this more, he's been legit lately. I mean, a 21% target share. It's tied with Tyreek Hill, so it's a little bit cheating there. He's a co-leader. But being the co-leader since week 5 in your passing attack, I think that's insane. It's not something I was expecting. We know that Jaylen Waddle, of course, has not been. He's almost an afterthought in this offense at this point. We know that Devon Achane has been more involved in the passing game, but very quietly over the past 5 weeks, two top three finishes at the position for Jonnu Smith. And if this was the beginning of the season, you'd be like, yeah, all you got to do is score a touchdown to be in the top three. No, the past month to 6 weeks of the season, the tight end position has been much better. Guys are having huge performances. Brock Bowers, Cade Otton, and Travis Kelce has been getting back over the past month or two. So I think Jonnu Smith, rest of season, not just this week is a bye week filler, but rest of season, probably a top 10 tight end, probably prefer him. Like, you could just straight up drop Kyle Pitts at this point and pick up Jonnu Smith and get just as much, if not better, production. You got the offense for Miami getting on track in a solid matchup, but 288 passing yards, three touchdowns for two of this past week. If that just continues in any way, I feel really good about Jonnu.
Okay, so I'm just looking at team success rate when they're targeting tight ends. This is since week 8, so pretty recent sample size here. Number one is George Kittle. Number two is Josh Oliver, Vikings tight end. Number three is Trey McBride. Number four, Brock Bowers. Number five, Mark Andrews. Number six, Jonnu Smith.
How about that?
Who 0.61 EPA per target. Insane, by the way, in this stretch that Kittle, 1.27 EPA per target. Like, just we're throwing a Kittle, we're getting more than a point. We're adding a point to the scoreboard. That's pretty crazy. So but again, this is the thing with Jonnu here is that, and it's not even that he's just all explosive plays. Like, only 37.5% of his plays have gone for 10 plus yards in this stretch. He has just been a successful chain mover and a big play threat because of the yards after catch stuff. We obviously saw that against the Raiders this past week. In this stretch, he's averaged 7.3 yards after catch per reception. Like, this is the thing, if we're complaining about, and I know people are still complaining about this wide receiver usage in this offense, the Jonnu plays are good, man. Like, I think sometimes they've overdone it with the Devon Achane design targets, but when they have not designed screens and gimmicky stuff for Jonnu Smith, when I'm saying like designed open space for him because the wide receivers are opening things up and you get the ball in his hands. Like, I know, shout out Dalton on this one, because he talked about Jonnu as like a deep tight end sleeper when we did the tight end preview, positional preview in the offseason. This is the vision right here. Like, oh, all the space created by the wide receivers, and you get a guy that is, you know, super athletic and very freaky for the tight end position and has this yak ability. Yeah, you can get some big plays. Like, this is exactly the vision here for Jonnu going to Miami. And I obviously love him as a start this week, and not to mention, it's a revenge game. Remember? I mean, he was a former Patriot, so why not?
Although they did pay him a decent, probably too much money to come onto that team, so he might not be too disappointed. But this is a guy who's always been, like you're saying, athletic yards after the catch. We saw it in Atlanta. He was a top 10 tight end in efficiency last year on a somewhat limited sample. We saw it in Tennessee, although he was a younger player, more raw at that point. Then he gets miscasted, so maybe that's where the revenge comes in with the New England Patriots. Kind of just gets thrown out, and he's not even utilized in that offense. Used as a running back more often than a tight end in terms of fantasy in that offense. So this is what we've always got out of him. He's now getting put in spots to win. That goal line touchdown was a schemed production touchdown for him, so that's good to see as well. I don't know if you saw this either. After the game, he throws the ball into the crowd after his first touchdown. It lands like 20 rows back in his son's hands. He didn't even know where his family was sitting afterwards. He said that, I didn't even know where they were. I knew they were somewhere in the stadium. And he said he just threw it into the stands excited, and his son literally caught the ball. Absolutely insane. But Jonnu, for me, start this week, top 10 tight end rest of the season.
I mean, yeah, it's a season of destiny, clearly, based on that anecdote. It's a season of destiny for Jonnu Smith. And yeah, please never try to add sanity or rationality to revenge game narratives. He got paid by the Patriots. That doesn't matter. This is revenge game sound.
Yeah, I take that back. Yeah, my bad. Totally.
Let's be professional on the pod. Thank you very much. All right, let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll get into my five stats for week 12 right after this. All right, let's get into my five stats. People need to know. Coming into week 12, start with the Packers offense coming out of their bye. And I want to highlight a couple of different things here. Number one, let's go through the route participation for their pass catchers in this game against Chicago coming off the bye. Number one is Tucker Kraft, 85% with just one target. Romeo Doubs, 80% with just two targets. Christian Watson runs a route on 70% of the dropbacks. It's his highest mark of the season. He still only gets four targets. If you're catching a trend here, not a lot of targets to go around. Jaden Reed, 60% route participation, second lowest of the season with just two targets. Josh Jacobs, 60% route participation as well with the team high five targets. Ben Sims, if you're not familiar with the great Ben Sims, he is a depth tight end on the Green Bay Packers. He runs around on 30% of the dropbacks. He gets zero targets. And Dontavian Wicks, also 30% route participation, third lowest of the season with just one target, zero catches. If this all seems like, route participation with low targets, it's because the Packers were 27th out of 28 teams last week in neutral pass rate. So we're seeing a lot of rush attempts. We're seeing a lot of rushing volume. We're seeing low pass attempts because of this neutral pass rate. And we're also seeing, three wide receivers, but then Ben Sims pop up with the 30% route participation because they went to a lot more heavy personnel sets. So is this a 1 week blip because of the matchup? That's sort of I was very intrigued on this Christian Watson stuff. So I kind of wanted to dig into some of this data and watch the game back and things like that. If you think about the Bears defense right now, which is another not quite as extreme as the Jets that fell off a cliff, but they are definitely a team that I think was better last year and has fallen back this year. The two ways that teams have been able to get them is over the middle passes, kind of picking on some of the linebackers, and running the ball. That is kind of exactly what the Packers did here. They leaked out Christian Watson. They did some more of the classic Christian Watson stuff where we get him free releases. We get him off the line of scrimmage, and we can get him on some horizontally breaking routes down the field. Some of these big overs, corner routes, those are Christian Watson's best routes. They did that in this game to the success against zone coverage there. And again, the whole plan worked. Fourth best dropback success rate among teams in week 11, ninth best rushing success rate. I thought the run game was really good. I thought Josh Jacobs was really good. And Jordan Love, outside of one mistake, was pretty damn good in this game as well. The best adjusted net yards per attempt among quarterbacks in week 11. So I think there's going to be a lot of talking point about this, big disappointing games for some of these pass catchers, Christian Watson getting a big promotion. Maybe the Watson promotion is sticky, but I think seeing heavier personnel going towards the run game, I think that might be a 1 week matchup thing for the Green Bay Packers. I don't know if we're going to see the exact same results try to be replicated against the Niners here in week 12.
Yeah, I lean matchup thing as well, too. Like, we've seen Matt LaFleur with just not an extra week, like he just said, coming off of the bye week, just completely change the offense around having Malik Willis out there, depending on what just will benefit the team more. And I think now with an extra week to prepare against a Bears team that you're very familiar with this opponent, and of course, in general, you're going to just see flaws when you have an extra week to prepare. They allow the fifth most rushing yards per play, all the stats that you were talking about as well. I think it was a run-heavy approach, and you're having success. And like for Green Bay, at least this season, like neutral scripts, of course, yes, like within a touchdown or so, if they just get up by 3 points, they start to lean on that run even more. So I even think it skews at that a little bit because Josh Jacobs has been that good. Matt LaFleur has been that good at just scheming up a running game this season. In general, for this game also, Love only throws 17 times because he's averaging 15 and a half yards per attempt. We see Watson with like the quietest 150-yard receiving game as well. So that's just going to lead to less passing attempts in the game when you're picking up 20-plus yard gains, not only to Watson, but to Josh Jacobs with multiple 15-yard catch and run situations as well. So I think it's a one-time thing here, but I will say, generally speaking, if the Packers can, like, they want to run this offense to have Love throw less than 30 times. Like, have him throw 24 to 26 times, have Jacobs run 18 times, get the other backs involved a couple of times, and just control this game. I don't know if their defense rest of the season against better offenses will allow that to be the case, right, but I think they can kind of just morph. Yeah, I think they can just morph into whatever game script they have to. We obviously know they have the receivers. I will say about the wide receiver usage, this is kind of what we saw last year out of the wide receivers. Like, it was Dobbs and Watson when healthy, which wasn't always the case with Watson last year. It was a very small sample. They were the guys on the outside, and Reed was this guy coming off the field, especially in two wide receiver sets. We're seeing that a little bit more these past couple of weeks, but again, I don't know how sticky it is as opposed to just a matchup thing.
Yeah, just one note on Josh Jacobs in the run game, too. I talked all offseason about, like, oh, why did they make the switch from Aaron Jones, who's still really good, even if you can't count on him to stay healthy, to Josh Jacobs coming off a disappointing season? I think that the reason they did that was, I mean, this was my theory in the offseason, was because they wanted to get to more varied run concepts. We've seen a lot of these Shanahan coaches want to get into more like man gap runs as opposed to just outside zone and things like that, which is kind of the Aaron Jones specialty. In week 11, Josh Jacobs ran 72% of his attempts into gap scheme runs, according to Fantasy Points data, 61.5% success rate. Really, really good in terms of those man gap success rates for Green Bay. So Josh Jacobs definitely, I think, could end up being the focal point of this offense going forward. The Packers get the Niners, the Dolphins, the Lions, the Seahawks, the Saints, then the Vikings, and then the Bears the rest of the season. I think it will be kind of a matchup-driven thing here, especially in terms of how much they can lean on the run game. Like, I don't know if they're going to be able to pull that off against the Niners this week. I don't know. Maybe Dolphins. Probably not Lions. Seahawks, they're still a pretty good offense. Saints in week 16, that looks like a big Josh Jacobs game to me. But yeah, it will be interesting to monitor this wide receiver usage. Like, at this point, we just know these guys are going to be very volatile in the receiver room. I think all of them will be. And as somebody that is a Jaden Reed fan and a Christian Watson skeptic, I will still say that I think Reed's the best pass catcher on this team, but he does not give you the same dimension as like a blocker. He doesn't give you the same necessarily like downfield contested catch stuff that Christian Watson can. So there's a lot of ways that, like, these guys are all good. We know that nobody's going to dominate the targets here. That's been basically like, that's why none of these guys were drafted that high this year.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel comfortable about none of those guys in my lineup, which really hurts, especially the way Jaden Reed started the season. The only guy I'm comfortable with is Jacobs in the passing attack. And at this point, Tucker Kraft, since all these guys have gotten healthy, Tucker Kraft has been an absolute zero in fantasy since they got Dobbs back from suspension. Watson healthy. You're lucky if Kraft becomes like a 3-catch, 30-yard guy or 30-yard guy for you. He was at a 20% touchdown rate earlier this season, about 2 weeks ago. That's now dropped off, which is completely, completely not sustainable, and we're seeing that. So even him at this point, it feels tough starting him, even with all these buys.
100%. Let's go to another team in the NFC. The Eagles' defensive surge post week 5 bye. The Eagles in this stretch are number one in EPA per play and success rate allowed since week 6. According to Next Gen Stats, the Eagles have recorded the fourth fastest average time to pressure this year at 2.56 seconds. When creating pressure, the Eagles have converted 24.8% of their pressures into sacks. That's the second highest rate in the NFL. The Rams, their opponent this week, and I think this is critical, have allowed pressure in 2.51 seconds on average in 2024. That is the fastest in the league. Highlighting two rookies here, right corner Quinyon Mitchell has been a premier coverage player on the outside. We know he played really well against Terry McLaurin this past week. Cooper DeJean got promoted into the lineup coming out of that week 5 bye. He has taken 277 out of 443 snaps this year as the slot corner, according to PFF. And again, he has been a great, great coverage player and an even better tackler. And all this is important to highlight against the Rams, Sal, because they're coming off of a fantastic outing against the Patriots. I remain still a little bit skeptical about a couple of things here, primarily the pass protection of Matthew Stafford's play under pressure. That next-gen stat about them allowing pressure the fastest, that tracks really well. And as I've highlighted on the show for a couple weeks now, Stafford is one of the lowest-rated quarterbacks, if not the lowest-rated quarterback among full-time starters, when pressured this year. So how do we feel like this Rams offense matches up against this, I mean, surging Eagles defense? Jalen Carter was the best player on the field last week. You've got all these young guys playing well in the secondary. How does this group with their two wide receivers who had like, what, 70% of the first read targets or something like that last week? How do all these guys match up against this Eagles defense this week?
Well, everything you were just saying really makes me want to look right after this at Kyren Williams receiving yards in terms of just if it's not a dump off, if it's a screen game as well, taking something to the house, but or just big gains there, explosive plays. Yeah, number one secondary right now, according to PFF, is Philadelphia. But you're also getting the past month of the season, Stafford ranks second in the NFL behind only Joe Burrow in passing yards. He's gone over 290 passing yards in each of the last three games since getting back his top receivers. So it's kind of strength on strength right now. And in terms of what the Vegas markets are saying, a 51-point total, I believe it's the highest on the week. So it seems like they're not believing as much in this Eagles defense, at least right now. So there could be an edge there if you do on an under in that total game. But the way I'm looking at it is I still feel comfortable about Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. I kind of just think they're, one, in terms of Cooper Kupp, way too savvy right now in terms of some of the defensive backs he'll see in this game, younger defensive backs. And with Puka Nacua, we saw it last week. I think this guy beats any matchup. Like, I don't care who is on him. I don't care if it's Patrick Surtain at this point, let alone Quinion Mitchell, a younger player. So I kind of tend to agree with some of these betting markets that, yes, I know last week they shut down Jaden Daniels. He seemed banged up in that game. And out, if you can shut down Terry McLaurin, there's not much. And it seems like that's what they were doing. There's not much left in that passing attack. Hence why Austin Eckler is the leading receiver with like 90 receiving yards on check down passes. So I think this is a totally different threat in the passing attack this week just because of these two receivers. And they even have depth if they need to go into the Tutu Atwells or DeMarcus Robinsons as a third or fourth read on some plays. So I think those guys are fine this week. Obviously, like fantasy-wise, we're starting them, but I think you could feel good about getting 15-plus point performances out of them still, especially when we get to the red zone, which I assume the Rams will be getting down there at least a couple times.
Yeah, I'm probably more skeptical than Sal is, but I mean, not that you're not going to start these guys in fantasy, right. But it's just, I think this will be a big test for both teams. If we come out of this with a great performance from this Eagles defense, which I think has just been fantastic this year, we're talking about them as, or I think we're talking about them as one, a top tier contender in the NFC, and truly a, like, you have to adjust expectations for any player going against them going forward if they can shut down this Rams offense. And two, I think it will be a little bit of a referendum on rest of season expectations for the Rams, certainly like their playoff odds and things like that. So this is a pretty big banger on Sunday night, Eagles, Rams. We got a great one last week with Chargers and Bengals, but this one is a pretty sick matchup as well.
Yeah, this one's great. There's like two to three really intriguing matchups. This might take the cake for it. I mean, we get Ravens, Chargers, Packers, 49ers are like the three games that I'm really focused in on. The rest is, for the most part, not that great. I think this one probably sits at the top right now for me.
All right, third stat-based storyline here is how to rank Malik Nabers in Week 12 amid a quarterback change. Let's just talk about him. Let's talk about Tommy DeVito, who last year, I mean, it's been weird to dig back into the Tommy DeVito stats this morning. Did not think that was something I was going to have to do. But DeVito averaged 7.2 yards per attempt throwing outside the numbers in 2023. Six of his eight touchdowns were to that area of the field. And Daniel Jones, meanwhile, this year, 4.9 yards per attempt on throws outside the numbers. To kind of continue that theme, Jones's 25.8 completion rate on throws of 20 plus yards is the second worst among quarterbacks, according to Pro Football Focus. These are guys who have taken 50 plus percent of their dropbacks. Next Gen Stats kind of puts this all together here with Malik Nabers has been particularly productive on non-vertical routes, catching 56 of his 72 such targets for 494 yards and two touchdowns. But he struggled to produce on vertical routes. They categorize those as go, post, corner, wheel routes, hauling in just 5 of 22 targets for 113 yards and a touchdown. Nabers is minus 117 receiving yards over expected on vertical routes, are the third fewest in the NFL this season. Obviously, you know, you watch Malik Nabers play, you look at those Daniel Jones completion percentage throws outside the numbers. That sounds like a Daniel Jones stat and not a Malik Nabers stat. Worth noting, according to Fantasy Points data, Malik Nabers versus man coverage, 0.38 targets per route run, 2.59 yards per route run, 10.6 yards per reception against man coverage. Against zone, 0.31 targets per route run, 2.04 yards per route run, and just 9.6 yards per reception. So, look, I mean, those are both good numbers. Like, you're over 2 yards per route run. You're getting targeted on 30-plus percent of your routes. Those are greats. But he has been, and in my charting for reception perception too, he's been much more dangerous against man coverage than zone coverage. The Bucs, of course, are the most zone-heavy defense in the NFL. So, putting all that together, Tommy Cutlets being strangely better against throwing outside the numbers than old Daniel Jones, Malik Nabers struggling on vertical routes, being a little bit better against man, going against a very zone heavy defense. How are we feeling about Malik Nabers amid this, what I would call a surprising quarterback change, bypassing Drew Lock, although Drew Lock has just put terrible film on, even dating back to the preseason, bypassing Drew Lock, who they paid money to in the offseason, to go back to Tommy DeVito?
Yeah, I think I feel better about Malik Nabers now after hearing everything you just mentioned. I was not aware of how good Tommy DeVito was on outside throws last year, but I was aware of how bad Daniel Jones has been this season, ranking 27th from a clean pocket in completion percentage, 6.1 yards per attempt, is 35th in the NFL. I mean, I came into this thinking, like, how much worse can it get? Like, could it get any worse? And it seems like it probably can't than what Daniel Jones has been putting out there over the past, really, for the most part, 6 weeks of the season. And, I mean, a lot of that has correlated with Andrew Thomas going down, which, of course, is not going to help the passing attack either. So I don't know. I feel like I don't feel terrible about Malik Nabers for a few reasons. One, can it get any worse? And two, the schedule the rest of the season, and it starts this week against the Bucs, is solid. Like, the Bucs allow the third most passing yards per play. I know they're coming out of the bye. Maybe some things change. I'm skeptical there. And then the rest of the season schedule for Nabers looks good. Like, I consider Nabers with a CeeDee Lamb, guys who are not playing with their top quarterbacks, tons of injuries on the offense. And I feel better about Nabers rest of the season, believe it or not, despite that offense, than what we're getting out of CeeDee Lamb right now. So for this week, Nabers is a borderline top 12 wide receiver for me. He's ahead, right behind guys like Pickens and Metcalf early on, ahead of guys like Flowers and Sutton. Sutton's a close one, though, based on how well him and Bo Nix have been playing and really Sean Payton designing that offense of late. But you get this team as a 5-point home underdog, which historically is a great spot for passing offenses. You're an underdog. You're probably going to be throwing more in a good matchup. You're in a comfortable environment at home. I think it's another kind of vintage Nabers game of 10 plus targets and hopefully a little bit more efficiency with Tommy DeVito on those outside throws.
Yeah, I mean, I could see this game being one of these weird shootouts, right? Especially if we get Mike Evans back, because it's not like the Giants defense is any good, even though they have good pass rushers. I don't know what to make of this stat, Sal, but looking further into the DeVito stuff, he actually had, in terms of quarterbacks that took 20% of their team dropbacks in 2023, he actually had the highest adjusted completion percentage under pressure, according to Pro Football Focus. Now, his passer rating is worse than when he's kept clean. That's basically the case with every quarterback in the NFL. But adjusted completion percentage for Tommy DeVito, according to PFF, under pressure last year, 75.8%. His adjusted completion percentage when kept clean, 78.9%. Danny Dimes, which, again, I think we got to retire that name, but Daniel Jones, 78.7 adjusted completion percentage when kept clean, under pressure, 65.9%. So Jones actually more sensitive to pressure than Tommy DeVito. That tracks with Jones's career. So I don't know. Maybe we're just coping here with the Malik Nabers stuff, but at least some interesting stats if you want to keep your optimism up for the rookie receiver.
I mean, it would be on brand for DeVito to keep this success up and then get paid by the New York Giants. So we'll see what happens this final 6 to 8 weeks of the season in New York.
I love that you just said, can it get worse? And that's probably like the outright worst scenario that anybody could ever say about the New York Giants. So congratulations to you for breaking all of the Giants fans' hearts out there, Sal. Appreciate that. Fourth stat here. Let's try to rank the Browns wide receivers in week 12. I have talked about this. I was tweeting about it today. The Jameis Winston fantasy wide receiver scam is on in Cleveland. And hey, as a believer in Cedric Tillman, as a longtime Elijah Moore backer, I'm saying that with complimentary tone here. I'm okay with Elijah Moore being part of a scam. Any of these guys getting scammed after what they've had to live through in Cleveland. So Hayden Winks of Underdog Fantasy had this one. The fantasy usage the last month for Browns receivers. Cedric Tillman's wide receiver 8 in overall usage. Jerry Jeudy's wide receiver 14 and Elijah Moore's wide receiver 15. That's bonkers. We're talking about three receivers from the same team. The concentration here is really critical. Makes all these guys playable. 88 to 75% route participation for Tillman, Jeudy, Njoku, and Moore. In the stretch with Jameis, No other wide receiver or tight end was above 18% last week. So talking about the matchup here this week, and we've used this to go against the to get the McLaurin stuff for the Steelers a couple weeks ago. Next Gen Stats notes that Joey Porter has shadowed wide receivers on over 65% of their wide aligned routes in 8 games this season. That's tied for the second most in the NFL with Deontay Banks. So who's the top outside option here? If we're looking at slot rate in weeks 9 to 11, Cedric Tillman is 20.4%. Jerry Jeudy is 36.5% as that flanker receiver who moves inside a little bit as well. And Elijah Moore is the highest slot percentage at 68.3%. So I would guess I would put their likelihood to go against Joey Porter, I'd put it at Moore is least likely, then Jeudy, and then Tillman just because he is that perimeter X receiver. But I do wonder, just because Judy's the bigger name, he's got the biggest contract, he's coming off the best week, maybe he ends up seeing more of Joey Porter. That is a little bit of guesswork. But what's not guesswork is that the Steelers are still the number one single high coverage team in the NFL by a wide margin at 71.6%, according to Fantasy Points data. They're the only team that plays single high on more than 70% of their plays. Jameis Winston versus single high coverage is ripping it. 10.7 average depth of throw this year. And he's actually been great at doing it. 9.03 adjusted net yards per attempt against single high. If you look at Brown's wide receiver performance against single high coverage on 31 dropbacks in weeks 9 and 11 with Jameis Winston under center, we've got Cedric Tillman at 8 targets, 2.48 yards per route run. Jerry Jeudy, 9 targets, 5.07 yards per route run. Worth noting that a 75-yard catch-and-run play against the Saints is kind of boosting that a little bit. And then Elijah Moore, just 4 targets, 0.7 yards per route run. And I think that makes sense with how these guys are used and deployed. You're not like Elijah Moore, I'd love for him to get more vertical targets, but he's more of that slot receiver type, and he's usually running, trying to split the safeties on post routes and things like that. Not really the outside route runner. Whereas Jerry Jeudy, when you get him in the slot or you get him as a flanker against single high coverage, he will run some of those outbreakers and corner routes and things like that. And obviously, typically your vertical X, Cedric Tillman, is going to be your single high player. So hearing all of this information, trying to figure out, again, who's the best receiver on this Thursday night matchup, I might kind of lean Jerry Jeudy a little bit, Sal, but where are you at?
Yeah, I'm leaning Jerry Jeudy. It's really close with Cedric Tillman in like early rankings. The matchup against Porter on the outside is probably the concern for me with Tillman. But all it takes is a couple of route wins, and Tillman can get totally there, like we saw probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago on some deep plays. And Jameis Winston is the guy to take those shots, like you were just mentioning, against single high coverage. So for me, it's Jeudy, Tillman, and there's kind of a teardrop to Elijah Moore. But he's still a startable player for me, a flex option. Heck, maybe even just a person that goes into your wide receiver 2 spot with all these bye weeks. Because we mentioned it like a week or two ago, like he's starting to see some better usage, and he saw some more downfield usage last week. His 30-yard touchdown, he was in the end zone. That was 30 yards downfield. He had 2 other deep targets of 15-plus yards in that game. He's looked good. Like you mentioned, all of them are top 15 right now in wide receiver usage. They're all averaging between 8 and 10 targets per game with Jameis, and it's just like the perfect flow right now for this Browns team. Their defense is not as good as it has been. Their run game and their offensive line, due to some injuries and just the personnel they have, has not been great. So they're just forced to throw the ball at this point to keep up in games, and just that's their best offense right now. Jameis is throwing 43 times per game in his 3 starts. And despite it being a Thursday night game, which doesn't usually fuel, at least on average, passing attacks, I still think this is a spot where the Steelers offense has been good enough to go out there and force Jameis to throw another 35 plus times. And if that's the case, I think all of these pass catchers, including Njoku, are live for 6 plus targets, which means they should all probably be in your lineup on a week where there's 6 teams on bye. So yeah, I would rank a Jeudy, Tillman, Moore for this week.
Yeah, the Jameis Winston scam is just going to put all of these guys within lineup consideration. I like that point from Sal, that regardless of how we rank them, I think ultimately they all end up startable. So if you do have, I mean, shoot, there are so many wide receivers on bye this week. You've got Falcons, Bills, Bengals, Saints, MVS, man, he's been carrying your fantasy team. He's on bye this week. You've got both Jets receivers, Brian Thomas Jr. Yeah, you're probably in a spot where you might need to. We're going to be some make or break stuff on Thursday with all these Browns wide receivers being in consideration. We shall see. But I do think Jeudy ends up being the guy this week that probably has the best schematic matchup. But that does not mean that Tillman needs to be benched. It does mean you can still start Elijah Moore, though. Yeah, schematically, the Steelers have only allowed 73.1 yards per game to slot receivers. So we're probably looking maybe at Jeudy as that top outside guy that's probably not going to get Porter. But again, he might end up you can go a lot of different directions, but I think Judy's probably the guy to bet on this week. So let's get to the fifth and final stat, which is, of course, the secret stat. And Sal, I'm hoping you can guess this secret quarterback. Over the last 2 weeks, this quarterback is 24th in adjusted net yards per attempt among quarterbacks with 20-plus dropbacks the last 2 weeks. He was one of the top performers in weeks 1-9. He was third best in weeks 1-9. His 0.3 fantasy points per dropback in this same span is 27th among quarterbacks. This all despite facing the lowest pressure rate of any quarterback in this span. So it's not been like, oh man, the offensive line stinks, we're just getting smoked up front. It has not been that way. However, when this quarterback is pressured, his pressure to sack ratio of 50% in the last 2 weeks is tied with Joe Flacco for the most among quarterbacks. So when there's pressure, not that there's been much, but when there is, it turns into disaster plays for this specific quarterback. Here's how they've tried to combat this particular offense. Like, all right, our quarterback is feeling heat. We're going to try to get the ball out quick. 2.19 time to throw is only beat by Bryce Young and Tua over the last 2 weeks. 6.0 average depth of throw. So getting it out, trying to get it short. Previously, he had a 2.6 time to throw and 8.2 average depth of throw in weeks 1-9. So Salvetri, this quarterback over the last 2 weeks, not performing well, doing things that we did not see early in the season, some bad habits with pressure to sack ratio. Who is this quarterback?
I only have one guess, so I hope this is right. Jaden Daniels.
We continue the streak, baby. It is Jaden Daniels.
I came into this. I like, as you're saying the stats, I'm also like reading them in the docs. I'm a little behind the scenes, but I forgot to send myself the doc. So I was just like, I really got to pay attention right now. And I was kind of lost the whole entire time. I knew Jaden Daniels was the only name in mind because of poor play in general recently. But when you said the time to throw and the average depth of target, it just reminded me of watching Austin Eckler and also Zach Ertz just have so many checkdowns last week. So I was like, okay, I feel confident in this one. It's my only option at this point in my brain. But yeah, Jaden Daniels not been great lately. But I'm curious if injury is related at all to this. He suffered an injury like a month ago, but also he cut like a terrible part of his throwing hand last week, I believe. Yeah. So I wonder if that had anything to do with the second half play, which was pretty limited from him. I guess we'll see moving forward with injury reports. But yeah, not great lately for Daniels, huh?
No. I would also note that the last 2 weeks he's faced the Steelers and the Eagles, which I think if I'm sitting down ranking NFL defenses, they might be the top two defenses in the league right now. So that's also a part of this. The thing that's interesting is the pressure to sack numbers, just because that was something that like people who watch quarterbacks and grade quarterbacks did not. That was something that they were concerned about him long term. And the offensive line still has played pretty well during this stretch. So there's a lot kind of on my radar, right? The Cliff Kingsbury stuff's at least in the back of my mind. You know, like, are we getting to a point where our only adjustment is getting the ball out fast and getting it short and things like that? That is at least, again, on my radar. But still, we get the Cowboys defense this week. The Cowboys pass rush is better, so that's something to monitor. Like Micah Parsons, he was close a couple times. He had a lot of pressures against the CJ Stroud Texans on Monday Night Football. Then we get the Titans. Then we get a bye in week 14, where I really think Daniels can come out of that feeling a lot better. Cause Dan Quinn said he's 100%. It's not the health that's been the issue lately. I mean, Dan Quinn can easily just be lying to us.
Yeah, and the injury that he suffered like a month ago, there was like immediate reports and concerns that, oh yeah, this is like a week-to-week thing, and then he ends up playing 3 days later. So something in there probably indicates a more serious injury than what we as the public know at this point.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm not too panicked about Jaden Daniels, but it has been a rough stretch of games here against two very good defenses. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, Sal gives us two stash candidates for you to keep an eye on heading into week 12. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, Sal. No more moves to make. Trade deadline's over. However, we're going to finish these podcasts with a couple of stash candidates here. I love stash season, okay? We've got one more pretty bad bye week gauntlet here, but once we get through that and people no longer need depth, this is the time to start getting those stash candidates in. So, Sal, every week you're going to give us two guys to stash or maybe keep on waiver wire speed dial. So give us your first candidate here heading into week 12.
Yeah, this first one I'll give you is probably a more general one. This might not be available in your super sickle leagues, but then the second one will be, I'm pretty sure on that. So the first one here, Jalen Wright of the Miami Dolphins. Jalen Wright has quietly taken over the number two running back job from the Dolphins the past 2 weeks. He, once again, this past week was playing about twice as many snaps as Raheem Mostert. Since Mostert fumbled late in the game in week 9, the last 2 weeks, it's been Jalen Wright as the RB2 on this offense. An offense that is trending in the right direction lately. Starting to get just things rolling. This past week, nearly 300 passing yards for Tua. Tua also looked good outside of the pocket, which for him is always a little bit of a concern, extending plays. But he was making some serious plays there, which is just kind of another bonus, which is not something we're used to from Tua Tagovailoa. So that's good to see. And Devon Achane, we've already seen him this year have a concussion scare, or at least he probably would have missed a game if he didn't have his bye week. We've seen him deal with injuries in the past, and knock on wood, we don't want to see him get hurt. One of the best running backs in fantasy right now. But the whole point of stashes here is to have these insurance options on your bench. If the starter was to go down, you have a guy that you can start. And in Jalen Wright's case, a 210-pound back with elite 4.39 speed can handle a red zone role, can handle just, in terms of in between the 20s, one of the most explosive players in college football, if not the most explosive running back last year. He can have just upside on a per carry basis, and that's what's happening right now on a per touch basis. So if Achane was to go down, I'm not going to say this is a league winner, although I think that's probably like his ceiling outcome is a guy who can do that for you. I would say that this is a top 20 running back, top 24 running back weekly, goes into your RB2 spot that you can just put on your bench and stash right now if you have the depth to do so.
Yeah, I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday, so by the time people are hearing it, waivers have already run, maybe this changed, but as of right now, he's only rostered in 6% of Yahoo League. So like, he's definitely a guy that's widely available. The Dolphins get the Patriots this week, the Packers, the Jets, the Texans, the 49ers, and the Browns. There are at least some spots in there from a run defense perspective where I'd give Miami the edge. I love this call. Yeah, I think he is one of the, he's not too discussed, right? Because he's a rookie. Raheem Mostert is there. People maybe don't know what the deal is with that. But I think he's looked good when he's gotten the ball this season. So I love that call from you there. He would instantly rock it up to like a definitely a starting running back range. I mean, there's a lot of good backs this year. It wouldn't be like a total RB1 smash or anything like that. But I do think he would be a starting running back if he ever got the job there. And look, the Dolphins, they're competitive. It's not completely over for them. So if they ever needed it, I think Jalen Wright would be a nice candidate there. Give us your second stash candidate heading into week 12.
Yeah, I think this one might be a little bit deeper, but I guess if Wright's available in over 90% of leagues, they're both in the same neighborhood here. And it's Sean Tucker of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, another running back. He's coming out of his bye week. So for sure, if anybody actually had them on their roster, even in deeper leagues, decent chance they dropped him while he was on his bye week. And it's just a player to stash at this point. He's definitely behind Rashad White, who's been better lately, and Bucky Irving, who continues to be extremely productive per touch on this offense. But again, it's a stash here. And if just one of those running backs was to go down, miss 1 to 2 weeks or the rest of the season with any type of injury scare here, then Sean Tucker jumps into an offense that the rest of the season has a great matchup for running backs. Just this schedule is extremely soft. You get the Giants this week. He's probably not going to have any chance to take advantage of that. But you get the Panthers twice this season. You get the Cowboys. You get the Raiders. The toughest matchup right now, rest of the season for this team, is the Chargers, which earlier in the year I would be pretty concerned about. But lately, it's been a little bit of a softer matchup. In general, it's a great spot to be. Sean Tucker, you remember back in week 6, nearly 200 yards, 2 touchdowns on 17 touches. He has a small sample of just 33 touches this year, but leading the NFL with 8.6 yards per touch. So a productive player that if one of those running backs was to go down, I do think he slides into the offense, probably sees at least 8 touches a game. Wouldn't be shocked if he starts seeing 12 to 14 touches per game in an offense that, since losing Chris Godwin, they're going to get Evans back. It still seems like they're leaning on their running backs more than the average offense in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. And their run game has been so much better this year. It's been actually really fun to watch under Liam Cohen as opposed to what they did with Dave Canales last year. The offensive line, you know, the youth there improving is a big part of it too. That schedule that you read off is just sick. I mean, for opposing running backs, like, that is just a great schedule. So I love the Sean Tucker call. It's definitely a deeper one because I think he has almost like no standalone value, but that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about stash candidates, somebody to keep on waiver wire speed dial because, man, if anything happened to Bucky Irving, especially Bucky Irving. I think Rashad White, he's more of the passing down guy, but if something did happen to Bucky Irving, I think Sean Tucker, we've already seen he has that explosive potential.
Yeah, explosive potential, upside, young player, any chance he's gotten, he's produced right now. And again, yeah, it just comes down to if one of those guys was to miss time, a last guy on your bench type of thing compared to, oh, I don't know, a wide receiver 5 or 6 that you're never going to be starting.
All right, that is going to do it. Sal, we'll do some more stash candidates next week as well. But for now, it's going to do it for this show. Tell the people what you got coming up this week on the Yahoo Airwaves.
Yeah, by the time you're listening to this, a good chance the Wednesday article is out, the risers and fallers, no more trade deadline. So risers and fallers heading into week 12 to know about. Thursday's piece will be the matchups to exploit, and then Friday, the key findings you should know before setting your lineups in week 12.
It's go time, baby. We're trying to make those playoff pushes, so make sure you check out all of Sal's content. Appreciate you, Sal, for doing this. That is going to do it for us today. Tomorrow on Thursday, Nate Tice will join us once again for a trip into the fantasy film room. We'll also preview, we'll expand on that Thursday night football game between the Steelers and the Browns. Until then, we are out.